This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, November 4th, 2020, on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. In just a few minutes, Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics breaks down election results for Arkansas. The Arkansas Department of Health counting 520 new confirmed COVID-19 cases and another 358 probable cases. There have been another 18 deaths from the virus in the last 24-hour testing period. Hospitalizations did drop by 21, but the number of people in hospitals because of complications from the disease still well above 600. Yesterday, Governor Asa Hutchinson and state officials discussed plans for the winter. We'll have more about that later on our show. Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan will serve a third term. He easily won re-election yesterday. Fayetteville City Council incumbents Matthew Petty and Sarah Bunch were re-elected. Newcomer Holly Hertzberg earned just more than 50% of the vote in a four-person council race. One city race, that for Ward 1, Position 2, headed for a runoff. Sebastian County voters rejected an extension of a sales tax for the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. More than 56% of the votes cast were against the countywide one-quarter cent tax that was originally approved to go into effect in 2002 after then Westark College joined the University of Arkansas system. This is Ozarks Orange. Happy Wednesday. While Arkansans may not know the results of the presidential election for a couple more days, they do have the outcomes of several federal, state, and local level races. We'll get to all of that in just a moment. But first, we wanted to hear from you as you cast your ballots on Election Day yesterday. So we stopped by the Springdale Civic Center to find out why some of you waited until the final day to vote and what's motivating you in the first place.
Actually, we tried so many times during the week, but there were so many things going on that I couldn't. And I'm like, okay, this is the only time. I better go right now before it's too packed in the afternoon. And here we are. The most important thing is we need to come and vote, make our vote count.
We were out of state working. I drove from Minnesota last night to get here to vote.
I actually ended up putting it off for a little too long, so I had to come today.
Today's special day. I would like happy word for president.
Well, I feel very good for giving my vote for president that me like. I'm happy.
You know, I enjoy coming out and, you know, the energy and the excitement of actually voting, being here, so.
I didn't really know what day it was, really. I'm not really too familiar with politics, to be honest with you. But, I mean, I don't know it was today, and today was my only day off. So, I mean, it was just the day off I got from work. So I said, well, might as well come over here and vote.
It's very safe. I mean, we all keep our distance. They give us little special pens so we won't touch anything. They have hand sanitizer. I mean, everybody's wearing their mask, as you know, as we all should be doing.
I don't know. I'm kind of excited. It's, you know, a way to get your voice out there.
I'm a firm believer in what Trump's doing for this country, and I want to be here to vote for his behalf.
Well, we need a high person and working country. That's all we need.
No, my important is for a change. A lot of things that know right.
Okay.
That's my important coming over here because I see a lot of things that know right. It's a one change.
You know, if you don't vote, you don't get your opinion counted. So just wanted to make my opinion matter just as much as everybody else's.
It's honestly, this year has just been total chaos and all, but the candidates that we have to choose from is kind of like the last election, stuck between a rock and a hard place. There's really no great selection, but I definitely wanted one over the other, so I felt it was important to show that.
I actually feel that people took advantage of the entire week past, or the past weeks, because I see less people right now, but I do remember passing by and it was a little bit more hectic, so I think they decided to come earlier, especially with all this pandemic going on.
If you have the chance to vote, you know, you should vote, because other people can't. So if you can, go ahead.
I come from a family of of, you know, Hispanics, so they can't really vote because they're not citizens. So, I mean, me being the oldest one, I mean, I don't know. It's, I feel like I hear on the radio all the time, you know, it's your right to vote. It's your right to vote. So I came over here. I mean, it's not like I know what it is. I know what we're doing, but I said, might as well. I mean, I got the right to vote. My parents told me, go ahead, vote. I mean, it's your right, so go ahead. So that's why I'm here.
And with me now on the phone from Little Rock is Roby Brock, who is with our partner Talk Business and Politics. A pleasant Wednesday to you, Roby.
Good to be with you and your listeners, Kyle.
All right. We could talk forever about national politics, and probably nothing would change by the time we were done with that conversation. Let's address Arkansas, and let's first start with Arkansas was a red state 2 years ago, 4 years ago. It certainly appears to be a red state in 2020.
I think it's a redder state now, to be honest with you, and this may not be something that every listener of KUAF may want to hear, but I think it's about to get redder even, to be honest with you. Look, you saw Republicans obviously assert their dominance with incumbents in this election cycle. Even the closely watched second congressional district race was not as competitive as it was, you know, hyped to be. And you see Tom Cotton winning by big numbers. You see President Trump winning the state by a huge margin, a little bit bigger than what he got in 2016 even. And I think the most decisive example of how much redder the state got is there were two House and two Senate seats down in South Arkansas, which is typically some Democratic strongholds that were held by Democrats, and all four of them went to the Republican candidates last night. And then a couple of potential races here in Central Arkansas for the House appear to be won by the Republicans, although I think the incumbents, although there are a couple challenge ballots that could still affect those races. But Arkansas was ruby red before this election cycle. I'm not sure what's redder than ruby red, but whatever that is the direction that we're going. And just one other thing I'll throw out there as to why I think it gets redder is next year the Republicans will control the redistricting process, and that will allow them to look at some Democratic seats and see if there's a way to redraw them to make them more competitive for additional Republicans.
Perhaps the term that will signify something that's redder than ruby red will just simply be Arkansas red.
There's a possibility there.
So, the Republican Party of Arkansas not only has the super majorities in the legislature, they're superer.
Yes. But look, this will also lead to issues, problems of governing as well, too, because it will not be a monolithic Republican Party in Arkansas. There will be moderate Republicans, there will be ultra-conservative Republicans, there will be Republicans that have particular, pet issues that are, you know, touch points for them. And just like we saw with Democrats, when Democrats had big dominance, there were conservative Democrats, moderate Democrats, and liberal Democrats. And so you've got to hold those coalitions together. There'll be some big picture items that they'll all agree on, but there'll be a lot of infighting amongst Republicans over the next couple of years, and particularly at the legislature. I've already seen some of it this morning on Twitter, where I've seen two state senators taking pot shots at each other. Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's what's coming in the Republican Party in the years to come, particularly with a big, you know, open governor seat and attorney general seat and everything else in 2022.
Earlier this week, you and John Brumman had your weekly conversation. There were discussions about the second district congressional race, the one that received the most attention. And it kind of broke down along those traditional voting lines. And in the end, French Hill wins re-election.
Yeah, the formula for Joyce Elliott, the Democrat, to have pulled that race out was to perform over 60% in Pulaski County and to do somewhere in the mid-30s in Faulkner and Saline County and do a little bit better than the 22% that Clark Tucker got in 2018 in White County. Those are your big population areas there. Joyce Elliott actually underperformed in Saline County and in White County from where Clark Tucker did in 2018. She did about the same in Faulkner County. And while she did well in Pulaski County, she didn't do as well as she needed to run up the score in a bigger way to do that. And so at the end of the night, French Hill, that formula that has worked for the Republicans for the better part of a decade in central Arkansas, followed its typical path of what it, how it plays out. And I have looked at the numbers a little bit closer this morning, too. And even some of the outlier smaller counties in the district came in bigger margins for French Hill than they have traditionally. And that accumulates another couple of thousand votes to the bottom line for him. There are still some contested ballots in Pulaski County that haven't been counted that may change the numbers a little bit more, but I don't expect that race to change more than a percent or two, potentially into Joyce Elliott's favor. It's not going to change the outcome of this race.
A poll that Talk Business and Hendricks College did show that Tom Cotton had overwhelming support. That, of course, played out last night. Any reason to believe, had there actually been a Democrat on the ballot, anything would be dramatically different in those results?
No. I think the Libertarian in that race, Ricky Dale Harrington, I think that he received a big chunk of Democratic support in there as a protest vote to Republican Senator Tom Cotton. And I do think that he got the traditional 2 or 3% that Libertarians typically get. It does not look like very many disaffected Republicans decided to voice any concerns over Tom Cotton. He seems to have done very well with Republican voters in the state of Arkansas, who came out in some pretty big numbers. So not a surprise there. And I don't think if there was a Democrat in the race, it would have been more than a maybe 2 or 3 percentage points difference from where it actually landed.
I know this is not the case, but it appears when you look at the numbers statewide that every Arkansan went to vote and voted for issue one, voted for issue two, and voted against issue three. The margins in difference are really startlingly similar.
They are. I saw that too. I mean, they're literally the same numbers. You just think on the one that failed, it's just a reversal.
Right.
I think that, I think there was a lot of popular support for issue one because the governor was behind it. There was a well-funded campaign that promoted issue one. And so those numbers were very much in line with what I thought it would do. I figured it'd be somewhere between 55 and 60%. I think it was on the low end there, and it did pass. Term limits is a popular issue, whether you like it or not. It is one of those easy to understand issues, even though this particular amendment was a bit complicated. You just read the ballot title to change term limits or alter term limits, amend term limits, and you just say term limits, and there's going to be a pretty natural 55, 45, 60, 40 reaction in favor to that. So I don't think that this term limits is going to really change much of how the legislature functions, even though it does change how many years they can serve and how they do it in what order. But at the end of the day, it's term limits, plain and simple. The other issue three, this ballot reform issue, I think was really complex and complicated and difficult to understand. There was never a proactive group out there that put money behind it with a simple message of, hey, vote for issue three because it does X. And lacking a clear message, lacking clear organization on it, I think people are going to reject anything that they just don't fully understand. And I think that was the case in issue three.
And, you know, it does kind of reflect, maybe I'm reaching a bit here, but it does kind of reflect that independent nature that Arkansas voters have had where, you know what, don't tell us what we can and cannot get on the ballot every 2 years.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, too. There's, again, we have a populist streak in the state, which is why term limits is popular. It's why raising the minimum wage was popular a couple of years ago. I think it's why we're at a place now with medical marijuana being accepted by a majority of Arkansans. While we're there, and again, I take away my right to, or make it more difficult for me to get issues on the ballot, and I might have a problem with that.
All right. Literally, we don't have all the results from the 2020 election yet, but here I go. 2022. Anything that we've learned in the last 24 hours to think about for the next 24 months in Arkansas?
Well, I mentioned redistricting earlier and how that is going to change the landscape in Arkansas for Democrats to, again, build on their small momentum that they have made over the last couple of years with fielding candidates and having some competitive races. It's going to get I think, more difficult after redistricting. So for 2022, I think that the Democratic Party, and I don't say that about leadership in particular, I'm just talking about people that consider themselves Democrats and however that organization structures itself and chooses to structure itself going forward. I think that they need to put a long-term plan in place for what can we do over the next several election cycles to build a farm team, to target races where if we can't be competitive, we've got to at least put some visible candidates out there and start building our brand. And how do we define our brand to reach these voters that are clearly identifying with Republican politics now? I just don't think it's a matter of recruiting candidates and putting them out there and hoping that they do well. If you look at the election returns where there were a lot of Democratic candidates, look at Northwest Arkansas, for example, there really were not very many close races up there despite the demographics that are changing in that area. It's going to be a slow, slow, slow teapot to get boiling. And so I really feel like there needs to be a strategic long-term plan in place. Look at what's gone on in Texas and Georgia and some other states where there have been some Democratic gains. We don't have the same rural-urban kind of transition that's going on in some of those states, but there are probably some lessons to be learned for the Democrats there. And they're going to need that to rebuild themselves for the next, decade, because it's going to get more difficult with the way Republicans are going to be in control of redistricting.
Finally, you were talking about the potential differences in Republicans in the legislature. Anything for the upcoming legislative session that you think might have shifted because of the results?
I don't. I think tax policy will be something interesting to watch. Our budget numbers are doing a little bit better than expectations, which means there could once again be, some surplus money there. Does that lead to an advocacy for more tax cuts, particularly with the passage of the half-cent sales tax for roads? I know Governor Hutchinson has wanted to bring that state income tax top rate down to 5%. I don't think he can get there, by the end of his term as governor, but does he make another attempt at that now that the possibility is there? With these Republican supermajorities, there will be a huge appetite to do more tax cuts. And there will not be enough Democrats to block them from doing it if, to put that money into things like education and prisons and health care. So I think that's where the potential ramifications are. The other thing is, we'll have to watch Arkansas works. I think that the Supreme Court case on the Affordable Care Act is going to be a bigger determinant of what happens with Arkansas works, the old private option going forward. So I think that decision is going to have to come down before it gets to the state legislature and we see if we have another contentious battle for funding that Medicaid expansion program. Those are two areas I would kind of watch for 2021's legislative session.
And you'll be able to watch those develop at talkbusiness.net. Roby Bronk is with Talk Business and Politics. Roby, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll talk again between now and 2022.
Good to be with you, Kyle.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The McMichael Lecture Series at St. Paul's presents the Reverend Marcus Haley, Spiritual Practice, this Saturday evening at 7, and Living Eucharistically, Sunday morning at 10. More information on this two-day virtual event is available at stpaulsfay.org/TIPPY.
Governor Asa Hutchinson is thinking about winter and COVID-19 again. At his weekly briefing devoted to the virus yesterday, he outlined a strategy for slowing the spread of the disease in Arkansas during the upcoming months. He says it is a layered approach, and it is a familiar one, too. That calls for social distancing and mask wearing.
And that is, as we mitigate the risk by implementing each part of the strategy, we realize that every layer builds upon the other layers, and it takes all of us working together to be successful. It's a layered approach to fighting the virus. And it starts with individual responsibility, from social distancing and compact crowd avoidance. That's the starting point. We wear our mask or our face coverings, and we should remember that we do have a mask mandate in Arkansas.
The governor used a graph to point out that COVID-19 deaths in the state, now numbering more than 2,000, are currently the third leading cause of death in Arkansas, behind cancer and heart attacks. Bo Ryle, the president and CEO of the Arkansas Hospital Association, says hospitalizations in Arkansas continue to take a toll on the state's healthcare system and its workers.
We're seeing increases across the state, in particular northeast and central Arkansas. Hospital bed capacity in northeast and central areas are tight, but the total beds available is not the issue. It is the number of healthcare workers available to staff the beds. Some numbers of interest to you. 10% of occupied beds have COVID patients. 26% of occupied ICU beds have COVID patients. And 31% of vents are in use by COVID patients. That's some of the highest numbers that we've seen in those areas. Currently, hospitals are not seeing any major deficiencies in PPE or testing supplies. What we are seeing is a shortage of healthcare workers. That's caused by fatigue, competition from other states, increasing cost, and community exposure. Reports from every region of the state indicate fatigue from healthcare workers in treating COVID patients. As we begin to think about our own fatigue, let's consider the effort going on by healthcare workers across our state and their fatigue.
Dr. Jose Romero, the state's Secretary of Health, is again asking Arkansans to reconsider traditional holiday family gatherings this fall and winter.
We need to really think seriously this year whether it is advisable to bring 20, 30 members into a home, especially if you're traveling from regions outside of Arkansas, into an environment where there can be increased transmission of the virus during those events. Also, some of us have family outside of the state, and we need to think very seriously about travel to and from areas of higher incidence of COVID.
And Arkansas's Secretary of Education, Johnny Key, says this week there have been 8 modifications of learning at schools. He says that's the smallest weekly number since the school year began. The entire briefing can be seen at Governor Hutchinson's YouTube page. This is Ozarks at Large. The Children's Advocacy Center of Benton County began offering services at its new Gentry facility Monday. The nonprofit, which provides services for child abuse victims and their families, built a second location to better serve residents in western Benton County. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The Children's Advocacy Center of Benton County broke ground on the $1.1 million project in March, and construction wrapped up in October. Executive Director Natalie Tibbs says the decision to expand services to Gentry was prompted in part by a discussion with partner agencies. Tibbs says they learned about a lot of cases that weren't coming to the Advocacy Center in Little Flock because they lived in western Benton County and didn't have the means to get there.
In addition, the data was showing how many families we were serving from this area, but only for initial services. They weren't able to come back for a medical exam, or they weren't able to come back for counseling, and there weren't any partner agencies that we could refer them to for counseling. And so we just felt like because the data supported that at least 30% of our clients could have been better served had we had this center, that it definitely showed the huge necessity for us to be able to expand.
Tibbs says they anticipate serving 40 to 60 children between now and the end of the year, and around 300 during the course of a year at the new facility.
It's just under 5,000 square feet, and it will provide all of the same services that our main location provides, which is advocacy support, forensic interviews, counseling, as well as medical exams.
Now that the new center is open and ready to serve clients, Tibbs says she has mixed emotions.
And the project of it in and of itself, it was pretty seamless. Working with our contractor was an amazing experience, who was very passionate about this cause. And the detail work that he put into it, just a super awesome experience overall. So I was sad. I was kind of sad that it was over. I really enjoyed it. And then just the mixed emotion of knowing why we're serving and being excited to serve its first child, because that's what we're setting out to do, but then also sad that we even would have to do that to begin with.
The Children's Advocacy Center of Benton County has seen more than 12,000 children since its inception 20 years ago. The center served about 1,000 children in 2019. Tibbs says they were tracking about 14% higher during the first quarter of this year.
Our team was kind of going, okay, here we go. We're going to it's going to be a busy, busy year to be tracking 14% higher already in just the first quarter. But then, you know, end of March is when that pandemic hit. So it's interesting. You'll see our numbers start to trail off towards the very end of March. And then April is predominantly one of our busiest months of the year because it's Child Abuse Awareness Month. So there's so much awareness about child abuse. Well, we saw a 50% decline in children served in April. And then it slowly creeped up just a little bit in May and June. And then started going up again at end of August. And then September was a busy month.
Year to date, the center has served 814 children. When the pandemic forced the closure of schools in the spring, advocates expressed concern that child abuse would increase while reporting would decrease. Tibbs says that prediction has come true.
I still don't think we've even hit the tip of the iceberg of what our children experienced during the quarantine. But we definitely saw just what we predicted, in that children were sent home and they were staying home in situations that were not safe. Reporting did go up once they went back to school, and we've been pretty steady ever since.
Executive Director Natalie Tibbs says they haven't seen the volume of cases they would have anticipated because there's still a mix of virtual and in-person learning at schools. She says it was an eye-opening experience to speak with a client about how the pandemic is making home life more dangerous for some children.
His father was already a very angry, just emotionally abusive person pre-pandemic. Well, the pandemic's not going to make people feel better. Being stuck at home, losing jobs, like that's not going to make you feel any better and want to do better. It's only going to make it worse. And so children often fall victim to the frustrations and stress of their parents. And that's exactly what we saw and had anticipated, because now they're home and it's one more burden, and we just don't all have the resources and outlets we need in order to express that stress and that frustration. And so our children fall victim to that.
In addition to its regular training sessions, the CAC started offering virtual instruction this year. The nonprofit has trained about 4,500 people through 79 trainings in 2020. Tibbs says organizations should operate at the highest standard of excellence when serving children.
And so that's something our center prides itself on, is that we don't ever want for children to fall through the cracks. And if there's a gap in serving them, then we want to ensure that we're doing that. And so we welcome a community to challenge us to ensure that we're always doing the very best that we can to serve kids where they need it most. And CACs exist to take services to kids where they're at, and to surround them completely with that collaborative approach. And so that's what we aim to accomplish, and why we felt that it was just so critical that we do this. And so we're grateful to be in Northwest Arkansas, and grateful to have the support of the community to continue empowering kids to find their voice.
More information about services provided by the Children's Advocacy Center of Benton County at its two locations is available at cacbentonco.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The Northwest Arkansas Land Trust, based in Fayetteville, has been awarded a major grant from the Walton Family Foundation to help farmers seeking land and resources to grow fruits and vegetables for local wholesale markets to meet growing demand. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The Northwest Arkansas Land Trust, which permanently conserves land across a 13-county region, was awarded a $920,000 grant from the Walton Family Foundation. The five-year grant will support existing and new family farms, promote sustainable farming practices, and strengthen local food systems. Susan Kohler is Farmland Preservation Manager for the Northwest Arkansas Land Trust.
We have conserved farmland throughout our history since 2003, but we now have some new tools to help both farmland owners think about conservation and transfer of farmland to new farmers that may not be their heirs. And we also have some new programs to help beginning farmers access land.
Over 2 million farms and ranches operate across the U.S. According to the most recent Department of Agriculture data, a decline of over 3% since 2012. Agricultural census data also found nearly all farms and ranches are family-owned, and the average age of farmers around 57. So the Northwest Arkansas Land Trust's new farmland preservation grant, Susan Kohler says, will help cultivate more farming in our region.
We've been developing this program for 2 years as part of the NWA Food Systems Initiative with other partners, including the University of Arkansas Center for Farms and Food, and also the New Food Conservancy, which is a local food hub that is helping to aggregate local produce as well as develop new markets, so that when we bring these new farmers or existing farmers in the area, when they're growing these new fruits and vegetables, they will have a market to take those to beyond the farmers' markets.
The Northwest Arkansas Food Systems Initiative, established last May by the Walton Family Foundation, is building on the region's historic farming heritage to connect new and existing small-scale farmers to land, technical assistance, capital, as well as to local wholesale and direct-to-consumer markets. And the Center for Arkansas Farms and Food is based at the Agricultural Experimental Station at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Those centers and grant projects are the result of demand for locally grown foods.
We've also seen a decline in the number of farms or the number of acres being farmed. So one of the important things about this work is the partnership with the Food Conservancy, because they are creating more wholesale markets and opportunities to ensure that farm viability beyond what somebody might be able to bring to the local farmers market. While they are very popular and they are growing, it's limited on what the amount of potential money that a farmer could make just using a farmer's market. So the Food Conservancy is working really hard to bring on new markets in institutional and wholesale. One of the big successes is they've secured contracts with HARPS. And so HARPS is now selling some of the local produce and fruits and vegetables. So we're going to see more of that over time, especially as we come out of the pandemic. Local schools, hospitals, other additional restaurant contracts, where farmers participating in this will have an opportunity to sell to these new markets to ensure their farm viability.
HARPS Food Stores, based in Springdale, Arkansas, operates a chain of 114 supermarkets in Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas. The Land Trust's new farmland preservation program will also conserve productive farmland from urban development, Kohler says.
And some of the first lands to go are farmland because they're flat and they're cleared, so they can be really attractive for development. And we need that, but we also want to be, careful that we don't continue to remove our local food shed so that, we're relying on further distant supplies. And I think that really was brought home to people during the pandemic, and they saw what that could be like when we had supply chain issues in the local grocery stores. So it's now is, just an even greater period of time to be thinking about the future of our local food system. And in addition, we do have across the nation farmers that are delaying retirement, family heirs that might have at one time had gone on to farm are seeking other opportunities. But there are new farmers that don't have access to land that would like to farm. And so we need to think about ways that we can support them and to get them those skills and then also to the access.
Fruit, vegetable, and nut crop production in Northwest Arkansas has decreased by over 50% over the last 5 years in Benton County alone, Kohler says. The Land Trust's new farm preservation program aims to help revitalize Northwest Arkansas' historically abundant fruit and vegetable farming industry.
It's really exciting. So the two elements of the program that are expanding is we will have lease-to-own farmland where farmers that are interested in continuing to grow or might need their first access to land would have an opportunity to lease-to-own farmland and then move into ownership gradually within a 3 to 5 year period. They will have also access to shared tools and equipment and, again, these markets and support to be growing plans and how to make the best of farm viability.
The Walton Family Foundation grant will also provide $350,000 in stewardship funding to encourage farmland conservation, Kohler says.
The other option is for farmers that may be more established and have greater financial capability, where they would like to purchase farmland on their own and participate in the program. We would work with them to either find farmland that's already been conserved or to help them place a conservation easement on that farmland so that we can ensure that it stays active in farming in perpetuity.
Kohler says the project will source federal programs that support agricultural land easements to leverage grant dollars
on some of the core counties of Northwest Arkansas. So Benton, Madison, Carroll, and Washington counties are some of our target areas. We want to hear from both existing farm landowners in those counties that may be interested in finding a new farmer to farm their land. Even if they're just interested in selling their land outright, we want to hear from them. Leasing farmland in those counties is something also that we need. And then farm seekers, so whether they're really in within Northwest Arkansas now or they're considering moving to Northwest Arkansas, we want to hear from them because we want to be able to help them see which parts of the program might work best for them.
The preservation program is building on Northwest Arkansas Land Trust's FarmLink, a free web service launched a year ago, where farm seekers create profiles to purchase lands that match their agricultural needs.
Whether it includes a sale or a lease, and also to understand conservation easements. NWA FarmLink has been active for about a year, and we have a dozen or so participants, and many of them are sharing that they are seeing success and working towards their goals. We've had what we call a couple of matches, which is really exciting, and but we need, you know, more participants, and we welcome landowners as well as farm seekers if they would like to join the community and, again, have access to some of these free services. We could help them navigate how they access land or transfer farmland.
The Northwest Arkansas Land Trust's Farmland Preservation Program's goal is to have 1,000 additional acres of fruit and vegetables in production by grantees across Northwest Arkansas within the next 10 years. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about the Northwest Arkansas Land Trust Farmland Preservation Program, you can visit nwalandtrust.org.
Support for KUAF is provided by Butterfield Trail Village, Northwest Arkansas's retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being. Offering daily activities, various living options, plus wellness facilities, aquatic center, and spa services. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for more. As the state's fastest growing region, quality healthcare professionals are essential. UAMS Northwest Regional Campus in Fayetteville is educating the future of healthcare. UAMS.info/future for information.
This is Ozarks at Large. A new 30-acre whitewater park is coming to the Arkansas-Oklahoma border just south of Siloam Springs. The Woke Whitewater Park will be constructed on the Illinois River off of Highway 59 in Oklahoma at the site of the old Lake Francis Spillway. Lake Francis was created in 1931 as a private resort with the construction of a concrete dam. In the 1950s, several cities, including Siloam Springs, starting to use the lake as a water source. What remained of the lake began to fill with silt and became a collection point for pollutants. In 1990, part of the dam collapsed, and Siloam Springs City Administrator Philip Patterson says the lake was drained.
So we own a fairly large amount of acreage, what used to be the lake, and we own the dam. Next to the dam is a very large slab of bedrock, and the water currently flows around the dam. And the idea behind this park is to cut this 1,200-foot-long kayak course, 100-foot-wide, around the edge of that bedrock. And the water that's now flowing around the dam, instead of flowing around the dam, will flow into this new kayak course. There's about, I think, 12 feet of fall, and there's going to be 8 different drops on the course.
The course will provide action for kayakers, tubers, and surfers of all skill levels. Construction is expected to wrap up in 2023. Patterson says some of the bedrock that will be removed to create the whitewater course will also be used to shore up what's left of the dam.
Dams are always a problem for swimmers and kayakers because if you do go over it, you get caught up in the hydraulics potentially below the dam. So what we're going to do is to use all of that or some of that bedrock material and stair-step the dam so that it doesn't have the massive hydraulics at the end where the water flows over. We'll put up buoys on the upstream side and warn people don't go any further. There's always the potential for somebody to go over, but now they won't get caught up in the hydraulics.
Reinforcing the dam, Patterson says, will also keep it from failing again, which could threaten the city's water supply. The Woke Whitewater Park will be operated by the Grand River Dam Authority and is located just 8 miles downstream from another whitewater park operated by Siloam Springs, one that opened back in 2014.
It's been exciting to watch this process unfold, and exciting to see the usage that the current kayak park has, because it's literally used by fishermen and, you know, people fishing, families enjoying time on the water, tubers, rafters, and kayakers. And sometimes all at the same time. Of that, if they are spending their money in Siloam Springs, it could be anywhere from $100,000 to $150,000 minimum in new sales tax revenue for Siloam Springs. Could be more, could be a little less, depending on exactly where they stay and how many nights they stay. But bringing and attracting those visitors to this region, it will be an economic boost to Northeast Oklahoma, Siloam Springs, and for that matter, Northwest Arkansas. Of that, if they are spending their money in Siloam Springs, it could be anywhere from $100,000 to $150,000 minimum in new sales tax revenue for Siloam Springs. Could be more, could be a little less, depending on exactly where they stay and how many nights they stay. But bringing and attracting those visitors to this region, it will be an economic boost to Northeast Oklahoma, Siloam Springs, and for that matter, Northwest Arkansas.
The Walton Family Foundation is supporting about 95% of the $33 million construction of the water park. But in support of the project, Patterson says the city deeded just a little over 17 acres to the Grand River Dam Authority with several clawback provisions.
So if by chance the property is not constructed in a number of years, then that property would revert back to the Oklahoma entity that is owned by the city of Siloam Springs. If for some reason they cease operating it as a kayak park, then that property would revert back to the city through its Oklahoma corporation. So it was a deed. We didn't sell it.
Patterson says the Whitewater Park fits right in with the region's goal of becoming an outdoor recreation destination. Aside from the Whitewater course, Woke will also include parking, spectator seating, rental services, and a trail system. The park got its name from a combination of the words water, Oklahoma, and Arkansas.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Freedom is what happens to a man on the inside. It is what happens to a man's being. It has nothing to do with voting, marching, picketing, rioting, though all be manifestations of it. No man can give me freedom or help me get it. A man is free when he can determine the style of his existence in an absurd world. A man is free when he sees himself for what he is and not as others define him. James Howell Cone was born to Charles and Lucy Cone on August 5th, 1938 in Fordyce, Arkansas, otherwise known as Dallas County. Cone's family lived in the colored section of the town Bearden. After graduation from Ouachita Training School, Cone would attend Shorter College in North Little Rock, Arkansas, and Philander Smith College, earning his Bachelor's of Arts in 1958. In 1961, Cone would earn a Master's of Divinity from Garrett Theological Seminary and then earn a Master's and Ph.D. from Northwestern University. As a young man during the height of the Civil Rights Movement, Cone would connect to the work of Black liberation. The frustration of racism challenged Cone to develop a Christian theology from the struggle to push America to live up to the words in the founding documents. Dr. Cone would form the language that would become Black Liberation Theology. Black Liberation Theology is defined in the Encyclopedia of Arkansas History and Culture as a theological identity that was accountable to the life, history, and culture of African American people. To help promote the new path to engaging in the Christian faith, Dr. Cohn wrote Black Theology and Black Power in 1969, which has gone through numerous reprints. Cohn would go on to write several other critical texts, including The Cross and the Lynching Tree in 2011. Dr. Cohn participated in numerous professional organizations, was an ordained and active minister, author of 12 books and over 150 articles, and the recipient of numerous awards, including induction into the Arkansas Black Hall of Fame. Dr. Cohn would pass away on April 28, 2018, but his example of commitment to faith and service to justice, reconciliation, and understanding will continue to be light that guides us forward. Today, we celebrate the life and legacy of one of Arkansas's own, the incomparable James Cohn.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can learn more about this series online at KUAF.com. Just search for Reflections in Black.
Before we leave on this Wednesday, a salute to the election and poll workers who spent parts of the past 2 weeks helping the rest of us vote. Yesterday, Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth caught up with Anthony DiNicola at the Elmdale Baptist Church in Springdale.
My name is Anthony DiNicola. I just moved here from Chicago, and I'm so grateful for this new community, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, folks who maybe felt uncomfortable being a poll worker this year didn't impede on everybody's ability to get out to the polls and get this done. And what's been incredible is the number of people who have voted early to make sure that today is a very manageable day, which is incredible. It's been nice and steady. We started out the day really strong with a ton of people voting, and now we have a nice steady pace that we can keep up with. Come on over. There you are. That's going to be your ballot and your stylus. And go ahead and vote. Yes, this is the day. It's a lot of casual conversation amongst us poll workers, and then people coming in and doing their thing, which is really great. We're so excited to see so many folks getting to vote in person. I think especially with folks that, you know, it's not like I can tell if someone has a pre-existing condition, but there's definitely some folks who have come in nervous and have walked away and directly told me, you know, I'm really grateful that y'all are taking so many precautions to make sure that people are safe and that, you know, not just while you're here, but making sure that you are masked and that you're taken care of. And if you aren't masked, that don't worry. We still have social distance guidelines and ways to keep other people safe as well. That was important to me. I wanted to make sure that as a poll worker, I was going to be safe as well. And it's clear that Jennifer Price has really taken this very seriously. And as per usual, from what I've heard, she's really good at running elections, and this one is no different. So, yeah.
And we'll hear from another poll worker Daniel talked to on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Clarksville. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors today included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, Zuzanna Sitek, who delivered our voters' voices at the top of the show, as well as information about the new Whitewater Park, Daniel Carruth, and Raven Cook. Timothy Dennis produced our show, much of it, from the Harold and Blanche Cox News studio next door. From the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening. Stay well. Get rest. Exhale. We'll keep you up to date throughout this week on KUAF as election news continues to develop.